Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Good morning, Russell.
Good morning.
How are you guys doing?
Good, dude. How are you doing?
I am a lot better.
Yes.
A lot better.
Why?
No, we're going to get into it. There was a reason why there was no episode on Tuesday.
Yeah.
For those who missed our little notice. But we had the wildest weekend at the Bioscope this past weekend. And so I'll explain it.
Cool.
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for popping in to our lovely video store.
Mm.
I have got myself a GeForce here.
Hello.
Who is an editor. We're not working a shift.
Yeah.
We've got ourselves a Cole.
Yeah, just a Cole.
Cole Kolsky.
Single one.
Yeah, there is only one.
Yeah, there you is only one, dude.
You're a singularity.
Yeah, that's me.
And you are a copywriter, digital copywriter, yeah. Creative copywriter. And my name is Russell, and I'm the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And we get together, usually on Tuesdays,
yeah.
to have these chats, which we refer to as the clerk's chats, where we are uninterrupted as we stand behind the counter of our video store,
yep.
catching up and talking shit. Occasionally, there's a guest episode, and that's usually on a Thursday.
Yeah.
It was wild. On Friday night, I was having this lovely dinner party, thinking about the wonderful weekend ahead of us at the cinema,
cool.
where I got the notification that the power went out.
Yeah.
And when we were in the throes of load shedding, it's relatively common, and we don't report on these things, but when the power goes now, it's a problem.
Yes.
Because that means like some fucking substation... Something's blown.
Yes.
And that means it could be long. It could be extended. The power only came back in the early hours of Tuesday morning.
Damn.
So it was wild. And it was one of those things like, you know, when you have a cold and your nose clogs up and you're like, what was it like to have a nose?
Yeah, you forget.
Like, I've forgotten the luxury of breathing through my nose. It was like that, where I was like, oh my God, like we're now in the caveman era. Like we're now foraging for berries. Like I can't remember a time when electricity flowed through this fucking building. But it's wild. And we kept in close contact. The 44 Stanley people were lovely. We made it through this really big birthday party, which was on Saturday morning, which was great. But then, unfortunately, there were a couple of screenings we had to cancel till we eventually brought in a generator, like a mobile generator and made it work.
What happened to 44 Stanley's whole solar system? They used to have a big solar system. I remember when we were at AFTA, they had like TVs up that were showing like their solar system and how much power it was generating and everything.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, no, it's not. That's an old school thing. It reduces their load,
but
it's not plugged
it's
into the system.
Oh, you know.
But anyways, we're back. Yeah. We're here. We're going strong now. Shit. All right. Let's get into it.
Mm. Let's do it.
Should we do a little, hey, did you guys see?
Let's do it.
Okay, do you want to kick things off, GeForce?
Sure thing. Hey, did you guys see? I believe, as of now, The Boy and the Heron is on Netflix.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is we've spoken about it several times, the Hayao Miyazaki film, along with quite a few other of his films and other Studio Ghibli films. It is now on Netflix for everyone to see.
Brilliant. Yeah.
And you should.
Should rewatch it as well.
Because it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was good, and they were always, it was always destined to go onto Netflix,
yes.
and I think that's why when it was screening in cinemas in other parts of the world, South Africa didn't get it,
yes.
so I think everyone was reluctant to just take the cinema rights, because they knew it was always going to go to Netflix.
Yes.
But a company did, shout out to Gravel Road, and we had the most incredible screenings at the Bioscope.
Yes.
And as we said, it's a very insular film. It's very much about him working through his,
End of his life, basically.
His visions, yeah. This is Miyazaki as a filmmaker. Yes. And it was made for him.
Yeah, very much so.
Which we always thought was a very interesting thing to point out. As opposed to being made for the audience.
Exactly. But I think that means, I think all of Ghibli's movies are now there, including Grave of the Fireflies, which wasn't for a long time.
Okay.
But that's on Netflix now as well.
I'm putting off watching that. Watch it.
Have you never seen it?
No.
We watched it at Varsity. Oof. It is a good cry.
Yeah.
two little kids in World War II.
Yes.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's heavy.
Hey, did you guys see there is an Ayrton Senna Netflix series?
I did not see that.
That is coming to Netflix on November the 29th.
Okay.
Ayrton Senna was sort of somewhat before our time.
A little bit. He was like early 90s.
And he famously died.
Yeah.
In a race, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he hit the wall. Like instant death.
Which is wild.
93 or 94?
There's not a lot of those cases. I mean, it is a very dangerous sport.
I mean, there was at one point earlier in the days of Formula One. So like three or four drivers would die every year.
Yeah, it's wild.
It was wildly dangerous.
Do you guys ever see the video of the death of Kyle Lamy?
Oh, no.
I think you've mentioned it before.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, it's wild.
It's fucked. Don't watch it.
No.
It's very violent.
And of course, now the world is F1 Bafok as a result of Drive to Survive being such a successful Netflix series.
I still haven't watched it.
So I think it'll be good to go back and see his legacy.
Yeah.
I tried the documentary, but it was...
Oh, I was about to say, did you watch the documentary?
There is a Senna documentary, which is also on Netflix.
Yeah.
Which also, this is how things work, folks. They put that out months before they know the biopic is coming so that the discussion starts. I'll never forget a woman in marketing saying, if I'm involved in some particular like eczema drug that she has to help market, like months before they even mention the drug, she'll try and seed into the conversation like dry skin, and dry skin's a problem. So they like sort of create the discussion first before they give you
the solution.
More,
No,
but there was a comedian has got this little bit that's floating around Instagram where he's talking about like, remember how kids just used to have casts?
Oh, right.
Like growing up, when we were kids in the 80s, like they were always just like kids in casts.
Yes.
It's like, that doesn't happen anymore. It's like, it's a good thing that that doesn't happen anymore. It's the same as F1 drivers dying. So yeah, that should be good.
Yes,
I
hope
it will
so.
Be great.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys see what the original title to Blink Twice was?
Oh yeah, we've spoken about it.
Have you spoken about it?
Yeah.
Oh, I think damn. Perrin brought it up.
Perrin brought it up.
Yeah.
But we definitely spoke about it. So yeah, Blink Twice, Zoe Kravitz's directorial debut, which has done so well at the Bioscope, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, and we kept it going. We brought it back. It's so cool.
That's
great psychological thriller.
Mm.
It's got a whole level of Epstein-esque toxic masculinity, elements to it. But its original title was called
Pussy Island.
Yes.
Which is amazing.
That's like hectic.
But you can also understand, if you've seen the movie, why they would change it, because it does give a bit away.
Okay.
Right.
It gives away.
Is the island actually a...
Well, so I think we can speak about it, because I actually want to get into something.
Yeah.
The island isn't one giant vagina.
Oh, damn. That's what I thought it meant.
But these women are taken to a private island that is owned by Channing Tatum, who's this like tech billionaire, and he's super charming, and they have this frivolous, lovely time where they just drink and party and eat and drink and party and eat until they start realizing something's off.
Right.
And without giving too much away, the kind of reveal is that something bad is happening on this island and they're not remembering it.
Okay.
They're being like drugged in a way. And
shit.
So there's this nefarious thing where the men are doing stuff to them as women.
Fucking hell.
So the one way to sell Blink Twice, which we spoke about, is it's a great psychological thriller, very similar to Get Out.
Hmm.
But Get Out was special because it had this beautiful, smart commentary on racism.
Yes.
And what it's like to be black in America.
Hmm.
This is a great psychological thriller where it's able to comment on toxic masculinity and Epstein type figures and these sort of powerful men and taking advantage and all of that.
Have you ever heard of that thing, man versus bear?
No.
Yes.
Where women say that they feel safer around a bear than they do around men. Which is like fucking
an
insane.
Actual bear.
Yes.
But I wanted to funny enough bring up, hey, did you guys see that there was a woman in this P. Diddy case?
Yes.
Who revealed at one of these parties that she didn't drink the drink that she was served.
Okay.
And as a result, was able to testify.
Oh my God.
And be this kind of clear witness in this case. And that is very similar to the plot of Blink Twice.
Holy shit.
So P. Diddy, for those who've missed it, has had decades of being a partier, debaucherous, music magnet kind of folk. Yeah. And is now on trial because so much of what he's done is horribly illegal and terrible.
Yes.
And I think has been left unchecked, a little bit like the Weinsteins of the world. Mm. But this was shrouded in more like party, as opposed to Weinstein, which was just like one or two people behind closed doors.
Yes.
You know, this was out in some form of open, but there was so much going on that was illegal and horrible. And it's now coming up and biting him in the ass, which is great. But I just love that there's this person who didn't take the sort of roofied drink and can now testify. Because in Blink Twice, that when they realize that something is strange on this island, why can't they remember? Why do I have dirt under my nails?
Right.
They then... The second half of the movie is them pretending like they are participating to then see what's going on so that they can escape this island. Nice. I don't think it gives an incredible amount away, but the movie's been out for a while, so we can talk about it.
No spoilers in film school. Well, there are spoilers in film school because we need to talk about it.
Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Music by John Williams?
Yes.
No.
So this is a new Disney Plus documentary that's coming out about the career of John Williams.
The very famous music composer who has composed the themes of everything you love.
Everything that you remember.
Jurassic Park.
That's good.
Star Wars, Harry Potter, Jaws, Superman, all of it is John Williams.
Isn't he the most nominated person in the Oscars history?
I think it's him or Walt Disney.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Walt Disney did have a shit ton. But he's got like 42 or something.
I see.
That's ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
And let's get the official number. Do you want me to fact
check? Yeah,
fact
do that while that. You're while
I've
you're
got
looking
a feeling John Williams is close to like 50 odd.
Yeah, I see.
Okay.
But I know, so there's this one that's coming out, and there's like a bunch of interviews, like in the trailer, you'll see Steven Spielberg and all these guys. But Steven Spielberg is also working on a documentary about John Williams.
Oh, really? A second documentary?
Yeah, he's making like his own one. Because, I mean, he's had such a long career with the guy. He knows him so
well. That's far more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious about that one.
He's in his 90s now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And he's still kind of doing stuff. What was the last score? It was Fableman.
Indiana Jones was his last one.
Okay. Yeah. Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Yes. The bad one. The bad movie.
But, because, I mean, those two are so like connected. Even on the very, very rare occasions that Spielberg does interviews. He did a series of interviews with, I think it was Jon Stewart.
Okay.
And there was a bunch of interviews with him, and then the other half of it was interviews with him and John Williams. It's like, they're like inseparable in terms of like their careers.
Yeah, they are.
You know, like you're interviewing Steven Spielberg, you have to get John Williams in on the conversation.
Exactly. Like, I know he said that his films wouldn't be what they are without his score.
Yes.
He's been nominated 48 times for Best Original Score and 5 times for Best Original Song. And he won 4 Oscars for Best Original Score.
Jeez.
So I think he's actually might be the record holder for wins.
He could be, because I think Meryl Streep's only 2. Daniel Day-Lewis is only 2.
No, the acting is 2.
Yeah.
I think 2 is the most actors I've ever gotten.
Well, I know, what's the guy's name? We were talking about him not that long ago. The guy who did like Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, Kenneth Branagh.
Kenneth Branagh has a ton, and all in different categories. He's won in like 6 or 7 different categories. For like best director, best screenplay, best original screenplay, best short film, best actor. He's won a lot of Oscars.
Okay.
Which is wild.
Okay, so it is Walt Disney. This is good for the general knowledge pub quiz.
Yes.
Like information so that you guys know. Walt Disney has been nominated 59 times, and John Williams is second with 48.
Jeez.
Okay. How many has Walt Disney won?
I don't know. It doesn't say. Only search nominations. We'll get to that next time.
Okay.
Yes.
Hey, did you guys see there is a more revealing trailer of the biopic. A complete unknown. The Timothy Chalamet Ding Dong starring film about Bob Dylan.
Yes.
This trailer gives us a bit more. The first one was a little arty and a little slow to sort of just show you the scenes. But this now really reveals the meat of the movie. Okay. And I think it's going to be around the point, which seems so silly now, but maybe as a music folk, Cole, you could help me with this. There was such a big moment in music when Bob Dylan went from folk to electric, and he did it, and he did it at a famous folk music festival,
right? Yes,
where he revealed this kind of electric sound,
okay,
and it had the whole world be like, "What?" And
yeah, it was mind blowing.
And I was like, really?
Like, it caused a disruption in the crowd. Like, people lost their shit physically.
Do you think it's the think it's the equivalent of sort of Beyonce doing a country album? But I mean,
I
that
like she's been setting that up
that yeah. sort of decades ago.
I suppose
has
like
an impact,
yeah, this is true. Like Beyonce doing that has had a massive impact on pop culture. But like, I suppose this is why Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah.
Call like a Rolling Stone the best song ever written. I think that might be why, because it was such a watershed moment, that single and that album.
Okay.
Yeah. That was the moment where he made that shift.
And I think it's from the trailer reveals that they're gonna sort of make a meal out of that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's gonna be a moment, because it seems like he's dealing with what everyone wants him to be as an artist.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he wants to put the finger to all of them. So it's a little bit of his rebellious side.
Okay.
But I'm curious to know the context of the film. And there was one thing that I read, which was like a quote from Bob Dylan. And now this is the problem with the internet. So you don't know whether this is real. But it almost sounded like Bob Dylan like wasn't wild about the movie. He's like, what if I just put on a wig and looked like Timothy Chalamet? Would he like that? That was the quote. And you're like, I don't know whether that's real.
Yes.
But that's not nice. But he's also like, it's amazing that he's around, like he's still with us, but he almost feels like a character, he almost feels like a person in history that's dead.
Totally.
Because he doesn't continue, he's not like Elton John that's still like,
yes,
you know, I'm doing my farewell tour and I'm still doing, you know, I'll still play at the Olympics.
Yes.
Like Bob Dylan's just like sitting somewhere.
And I mean, like, he is a caricature because he's got like his Nobel Prize, and like in my mind only dead people have Nobel Prizes. But then he also made a Christmas album. Did you see this?
Oh,
like jingle bells, like that kind of shit. It's terrible. Check it out.
Not an AI.
Yeah, not an AI.
Wow.
He did it by choice. He volunteered that in his career. But talking about Elton John, hey, did you guys see he's made a documentary?
Oh.
About himself.
Yeah, about himself.
Okay.
So he's made a film about himself, and now he's making a documentary about himself. He's loving his retirements.
Sorry, just to segue back to transitions.
Yeah.
You know, things like going from folk to electric. How did the world not make a bigger deal about Michael Jackson becoming white?
I think we all...
Was like, that a big deal, or was
I
too
it was
young
a big
for
deal.
That?
I remember all of us talking about it.
I remember it being a biggish deal.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a wild fucking thing to have happened, right?
Exactly. And I mean, like, the fact that it's so rare, but it happens to someone who's the most famous person in the world feels like an astronomical, like, odd.
Yeah. And it just feels like a little bit like me accepting I'm not ever going to have electricity in my shop. It just feels like the world was like, okay, so that's what you look like now. Let's carry on. But like, it's a fucking weird thing to have happened in history.
Yes.
Like, imagine explaining music history to an alien and you're like, there was this guy.
Yes.
Then he became white. Like, it is like, weird.
Probably never ever happened anywhere else that I can think of. Maybe
he had,
we don't hear of it. Like, it's this
had,
thing.
He had vitiligo.
Something,
It's that where sort of spots come up. You've seen that very famous model that has it. And it is a thing that grows. Not to the point that it covers your whole body. So he had surgery done to exacerbate it, to become white. But I think he had it and was hiding it for a while.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know a few people who have it and they're scared that it's going to like like be in a place where people can see it.
Yeah, I've got a buddy that when it showed up, he did a tattoo around it.
Okay.
And so he can see its growth.
How it progresses.
How it progresses.
Interesting.
That's cool.
But I'm bringing
up
we
need to be more accepting of it.
Yeah.
It's like a thing. It's your body. You know, sure. What can you do about it?
No, and you could have kind of owned that. It's really interesting that it was obviously at a time where he felt he needed to keep it a secret. And,
yeah, totally.
But then it's like, hey, the fucking cat's out the bag when you become white.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. But entire race changes.
Yeah, I bring it up because just a reminder, there's going to be a film in the early part of next year.
Oh, yes.
The biopic well. On Michael Jackson that's called Michael.
Yeah.
It's a big ass fucking movie.
Oh, and his nephew is playing him, right?
It's someone Jackson.
So yeah, it's definitely a family member.
It's a someone Jackson, yeah. And I saw a little trailer of it at that special junket that I have to keep a secret.
Yes,
but it looks interesting. Okay. It's gonna be a big movie of next year.
Right.
So yeah, should we get on?
Well, Cole was in the middle of something.
I'm so sorry. You were.
I think
it was about Elton John and his documentary. Where's it going to be?
Disney Plus.
Disney.
That's also the place where he streamed his farewell tour final concert at Dodger Stadium.
Has he finished performing live now?
Oh yeah, it's gone.
Okay.
And if he had seen my question asked correctly, he could have come to South Africa.
So Cole's shining moment. Was
greatest moments of my life.
The greatest moment of Cole's life
was
submitting a question to a big question and answers session that
like
happened
Facebook Live interview
with Elton John, and someone read it a bit too quickly, and it was Cole from South America.
Yeah,
and your question was, would you ever come to South Africa?
Yeah, my mom and I would love to say goodbye.
Okay.
Well, are you going to come to South Africa again? Is what I said.
Okay.
And it was Cole Matthews.
Says, intern at his social media team was like, South Africa's not a continent. He must mean South America.
Yeah. I watched Elton John at the Dome.
Same. I was there as well.
Yeah.
That was 2009, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it was a good show.
Cool.
All right.
Hey, I got one more. Did you guys see on the topic of biopic, if you prefer. Did you guys see the trailer for Better Man?
Yes, it's now finally come out.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
We brought this up a while ago. This is the Robbie Williams biopic.
Yes.
Where Robbie Williams is a monkey.
Yes.
It looks awesome,
this,
dude.
This one means a bit to me because our good friend Tom, who's in Short Straw, who now operates around the world as a DOP, had a chance to meet that director. He worked together with him.
Oh, yes. You told me about this.
And he showed him footage.
Nice.
And so Tom was talking about some of the scenes from this movie. And up until that point, we hadn't seen a trailer, but now a trailer's finally come out. So it's the director from Greatest Showman has made this biopic about Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
But Robbie Williams is a monkey.
He's a
fucking monkey. It's like it's a Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Technically, CGI he's an ape, monkey. Not a monkey. It's just, you know.
He's an ape.
Yes.
But it's like, you can play with that so well.
Yeah.
And this is the guy behind Greatest Showman. So there's going to be these like musical numbers.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be cool. And
it
think through the device of the ape.
Yes.
You know, you can play with the idea of Robbie Williams' debauchery and like his demons and his
or like him just being singled out as a weirdo, you know, being different to everyone else
and
like struggling to fit in. There's a lot that you can work with there. It's brilliant.
But what I think is so exciting is that he can play himself.
Yes.
So in every other one of these movies, you hire an actor that looks like you, like Chalamet or Rami Malek or whatever. But here, through the device of the CGI character, you can actually get the man himself to play himself.
Yes.
But so, you can play with the idea of aging and shit like
so
that.
So on set, it was a different guy.
Sure, but I'm
just
saying,
the
voice
is Robbie Williams.
was Robbie Williams.
Oh, I see.
So it's going to be quite special in that regard. Mm.
I have one more.
Yeah, okay, let's go for it.
Hey, did you guys see Apple TV Plus new series called Disclaimer?
Oh, no.
With Cate Blanchett. Who's like this world famous award-winning journalist that uncovers like deep-seated hypocrisy in big organizations.
Yes.
Like big uncovering news stories, scandalous kind of stuff. And a book gets delivered to her house.
Yeah.
And it's written by the actor from Kevin Kline. I was about to say A Fish Called Wanda.
Yes.
His greatest role. he is the father of a son who died in a tragic accident and she was involved in his death.
Okay.
And now he's uncovering this. It's an 8-part miniseries directed by Alfonso Cuarón.
Oh, hey. Cool. Nice.
And the trailer is fantastic. And Kevin Klein, I think, is the most underrated actor alive. He is a genius.
So someone who spent their whole career uncovering, you know, the dark, nefarious stuff.
Exactly.
She's now
got a secret.
She's at the helm of her own dark, nefarious stuff, and he's going to be exposing her.
Exactly. And basically what it takes for her, what she's going to do in response to this.
Right.
The trailer ends with her holding a knife.
Right.
You're just like, this is saucy.
Okay.
Apple TV is fucking good, eh?
Well, speaking of Apple TV, real quick, though, did you guys see the trailer for Before?
No.
So this is, speaking of actors in unusual roles, this is like a psychological horror series starring Billy Crystal.
What?
Yeah.
I saw the poster for it, but I didn't know what it
is. I've never seen him in a dramatic role. It actually looks really good. Like, he's a good actor.
Okay. Before.
Yeah, it's called Before.
Do we know anything about what it's about?
It's something about so he's a child psychologist, I think, whose wife committed suicide. And there's a child who's like, who knows something about him and is somehow connected to him, who also has problems that he's now trying to like help this kid through.
Oh, it's a psychological thriller.
Yeah.
Oh,
has he done?
It looks
any...
more like horror than thriller.
Has he done anything dramatic?
Not that I've ever seen.
I suppose not dramatic in that sense, but when Harry Met Sally is not strictly comedy,
it's
you know?
Straight comedy. Yeah.
And it's like you can see the layers there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. My I associate him with Oscars.
Always the best Oscars host.
At my most impressionable age,
yes,
13, 14, 15, 16, like he was the host of the Oscars.
Yes.
And whenever he like put himself in the scenes in the sort of opening monologue-y sort of moments,
yes,
and he put himself in the Oscar films of the year being comedic, I was like, this is genius. This is funny. Yeah.
His musical number for the 2003 Oscars when Return of the King was nominated. My favorite things was about Lord of the Rings. That's all I remember. Oh, and then for Lost in Translation, I think for Sofia Coppola, he took Maria from West Side Story when Sofia, like that. It's hilarious.
He also, I brought it up a few weeks ago, just like coincidentally, he did a like sort of stand-up, sort of one-man show sort of thing called 700 Sundays. I think it's on Showmax.
But
it's
was that a new
really good
film?
No, this was a few years ago. This was like 10 years or so years ago. It's like a it's based on his autobiography.
Okay.
And he turned it into like this sort of stand up thing. It's like just the story of his life told like semi comedically, semi seriously.
So more of a sort of one person show.
Yeah, kind of. But it's really good.
And that's on Showmax.
I think it's on Showmax, yes.
700 Sundays.
Yeah, he called it 700 Sundays because he estimates roughly that's how many days he had with his dad. Because his dad worked like 6 days a week and he was only home on Sundays. And he died quite young.
Fuck me.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's really, really
I'm
good.
Sold on that already.
Yeah, that title is hectic.
Right.
Magic. Okay, let's move on to films.
Let's do it.
The big one.
Mm.
The big one, yeah.
The grand dam of films of the week was obviously Joker.
Joker floppier, do you? Am I right?
Funny, yeah. We went to a special premiere of it last week. It then opened in cinemas over the weekend.
Mm.
And it is number one in South Africa in terms of the movies because I think it was just such a eagerly anticipated film.
Yes.
And it would be interesting to see what the general public's reaction is to it because we got whiffs of the critics' reaction to it and it was not good.
Yeah.
But we went into the screening and for 2.5 hours, the three or four of us, how many of us was there? Three of us. It was the three of us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't laugh. We didn't nudge each other and go, how cool.
Yeah.
We didn't really talk about it.
My favorite was watching Russ next to me, like writhing in discomfort whenever a new music number began. And it's like you normally get really excited when a new music number happens, right? You get stimulated.
Like
but
the
in
energy
this form,
normally goes up.
It's just like, and I could see Russ going like,
yes.
No.
Shuffling in discomfort. So I was like, because sitting through that was hard.
Yes.
I love musicals.
Yeah.
And so, but that wasn't a musical.
No.
It was just moments where people sort of very uncertainly sang old jukebox songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a musical. Mm. But let's start this off with one important question, which is, why did we like the first Joker and why was it successful?
I like the first Joker because I didn't like the first Joker. I don't like that movie.
Okay, yeah. So maybe you're not the person to
speak
on.
I actually wanted to bring this up as well. I think how we feel about the first one is like kind of part of this conversation.
Exactly. Yes. That's why I want to start there. Yes. So in a world of glossy, big Marvel superhero films, where this is very much the era, where they dominated the box office,
yes,
here comes a more grimy, indie-looking, art house-feeling interpretation of the Batman world. We don't even get a glimmer of Batman.
Yeah.
And we have Joaquin Phoenix acting his pants off, winning an Oscar for the first Joker film.
Yeah, yeah. It's a mid-budget character drama. It's not a comic book movie.
Yeah, and I think perhaps why it did so well was that it was different, and it wasn't, it had some authenticity and integrity as a sort of an art house art product, as opposed to this popcorn movie. But did you like it, Cole, the first Joker?
I can't remember much about it. I think that's also, it was before I knew what an incel was.
Yes.
And before I knew that the film was a dog whistle for incels.
So just elaborate on that, because that's important.
It is really important. I think that's, I enjoyed it, or enjoy is a really weird word to use in a film where you're not meant to like the protagonist, you know? You're not meant to sympathize with them.
I disagree with that.
Yes, I know what you mean. Yes. I know what you're going to say. Like, Todd Phillips has an intention.
Yeah.
He didn't get that across at all, which is, did you direct it well?
Yeah.
You know, that's the question we need to ask about it, because clearly it's a Patrick Bateman kind of situation where you have a psychotic, murderous, bad person.
Are you still talking about the first one?
Yes, both. Okay. Where you're not meant to like this character, but this is a character study of this person, how they move in the world, right? Okay. But what you have in this situation is a person that you begin pitying, and you just think to yourself, I shouldn't be pitying this person. Because what ends up happening is that you have this framing of woman.
Yes.
And especially through his mother, okay? Mm-hmm. I can't remember a lot about it. But there's the woman in his apartment block, and he fantasizes and fictionalizes a lot of the engagements he has with her.
Yes.
And then when I don't think he realizes, I can't remember, that all of that was a lie.
Mm-hmm.
And she's being standoffish. She's like, what the hell you want? Why are you in my apartment? Because he's a stranger to her.
Yeah.
All the fantasies that he's had of her are not real.
Yeah.
Right? So he's owed something from her.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of the character's approach.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I don't want to talk about it too much more, but
the first one ends with him killing a bunch of people, one of which is live on air.
Yeah.
And that seems to make him a figurehead in this Gotham city. And it ends with him being incarcerated.
Yeah, because what you're saying here is cases like Patrick Bateman and Tyler Durden.
Yes.
These are characters that are often they're misinterpreted by the audience.
Yes.
As we're meant to engage with them in a certain way. I don't think the audience is misinterpreting what they're doing with the Joker.
Right.
I think they're deliberately trying to make us empathize with this guy.
Right.
I think that's what the first movie is doing.
Yes.
Which is just wrong on every level. Yes. We should hate this dude.
Exactly.
And the way it's portrayed in that film, in the first film I'm talking about, there's, in the background of this movie, there are these there's these protests that are going on. Right. Mm. And it's the gist of it is there's a bunch of people protesting that rich people are rich, which is a bit if that was ever going to happen, it would have happened by now.
Yes.
But what it's saying is, and then at the end of the film, once after he kills Robert De Niro and all that thing, and the protesters, this mob hero turns him into a hero, essentially. They embrace this guy for doing it.
Mm.
Right. In saying that, these people are these are the 99%, every people protesting the rich.
Yes.
They're saying to us, the protesters are us. It's the audience.
Yes.
That's us. So it's saying, we believe you would empathize with the Joker.
Right. And
you would hold him up as a hero, not Batman, not a character like Batman.
Yes.
And I'm like, that is wrong.
that is fucking wrong.
I think a lot of people went out and enjoyed the movie because it was well acted. There were these crazy sort of scenes that I think shocked
beautifully
us.
Beautifully shot.
That sort of
great
remembered
music
us.
As well.
There was these iconic moments, we all know the stairs and him dancing on the stairs. So they made this iconic film.
Yeah.
I think it had an extra boost by what you're saying, certain individuals identifying with him.
Yeah.
I don't think that was what made up the majority of its success. I think it was just this good film that was refreshingly different that the world needed. It's a little bit like after certain stale, boring politicians, a Trump is interesting because he's charismatic and he gets the audience thinking, and maybe he'll shake it up a bit. I'm talking like 2016.
This is why everyone was saying he speaks his mind, that Donald Trump. That's why I like him.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So here's this movie that comes along that kind of changes it and plays with the idea of the comic book movie.
Yeah.
But then I think the cup spilleth over with the incels, which make up a large swaying chunk, identifying with this character and liking this movie.
Yeah, like the like voices online. It's quite
which fuel particularly things, online. Just fuel the algorithms, which fuel all these kinds of things, and so they do make a difference. So here comes the sequel, which French translates to like joint madness, like two people mad,
it's like a shared delusion.
Shared delusions. That's the better word.
Mm.
And then we get told it's going to be a musical.
Yes.
And then the world's like, what? No, fuck, no. And then it's like, no, well, it's not quite a musical.
Yeah, 2 weeks
it's like,
before.
It's
not a musical.
They then tried to sort of change it. But what we can say is that it's clearly him trying to course correct the way that first one sort of made this villain a hero, right? Yes.
In some ways, it kind of becomes that late in the film.
The movie is a majoritively a courtroom drama.
Yes.
Let's get into it. It doesn't land.
No.
Yeah. I think we wanted it to go somewhere.
Yes.
And it kind of doesn't, right?
Yeah.
Is that the sort of simplified version of this movie? It's like there were a couple of moments like basically, the whole premise of the movie is him now on trial for the crimes that he committed in the first film.
Yep.
And the premise of the movie is does he have a split personality? Is he fucked in the head?
Yes.
Like, can you plead insanity? Or is he aware of what's going on?
Yeah.
Like, is the Joker another character? And there's even this moment in the movie where he represents himself with the Joker makeup on. And you're like, this could be an iconic scene.
Right.
But it isn't.
Yes.
He puts on like a weird black sort of 1940s accent and speaks some shit. And you're like, what the fuck's going on, guys?
Yeah.
And then,
being the Joker, but he's being performative as the Joker, but as someone else.
But as like a weird black guy.
Yes.
I declare the something. It's like, what is that decision? But,
Why are you copying, what's the character's name in Knives Out that Daniel Craig plays?
Yeah,
why are you sounding like him?
It's weird. And then, of course, someone we haven't even brought up yet is the fact that Lady Gaga is in this movie.
Yes.
And
she's bland.
And what most folk have said in their reviews is that she was underutilized.
Yeah, but like, how do you make Lady Gaga boring? I don't understand that. Like, she's an incredible actor, but she's the world's best performer. Like arguably, right?
Yeah.
She's like one of the most iconic performers we have.
Yes.
She knows how to entertain. She knows how to be charismatic.
Yeah.
And she kind of is that. It's like below, you can see her trying to get out, but there's this narrative. It's the story that just you can't break through when there's no good conflict, there's no good drama, there's no good character goals, there's no stakes. Like, all the basic fundamentals of good storytelling are not present in this movie.
Yes.
So I heard one thing which was interesting, which was that if you're going in thinking it's gonna take these huge, bold, dramatic turns and be completely bonkers, like a big wild swing, you are going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
But if you know that it is a character study that is really looking, once again, like the first one, at just this one person's mental health, perhaps a second viewing or the correct frame could have you enjoy this film.
Right.
Interesting. And it's a musical.
Yes.
Right? So it's a musical. It's not a musical. That's one of the problems, is like, what does it want to be? And the musical numbers are framed as being inside the Joker's mind, like a reflection of his psychosis, right?
Yeah, because to be clear, in musicals, just to say that, in musicals, it's a given that the musical numbers are non-literal.
Yes.
Right? They're not actually people singing. It's just kind of it's an expression of like the meta text, essentially.
Yes.
And this like really like makes us know that they're not literal.
Yes.
And they're completely separate from everything else.
Exactly. And that they have no bearing on the plot whatsoever, right? But then if it's part of his imagination and he's imagining himself on this rooftop with these lights at, say, Arkham Hotel, whatever, and this like great soundstage and a television program, just like, you have the most boring imagination in the fucking world, dude. Like, if you get to play in the mind of someone and create a musical number inside of the Joker's mind, that is the most undercooked idea I've ever seen in a film. It's terrible.
Well, yeah. My feeling was like, I get the idea and we could do it once.
Yeah.
Like a big old number. Maybe a second time. But this was like, what, four or five times?
There were about five times. Yes.
And they weren't original songs
that
were made specifically for the story. They were, as you said, a jukebox musical, which is the term when you take already existing songs and you interpret them into your musical. And so they didn't, that's why I rolled like by the third or the fourth one because I was like, all I know now is that for the next 2 minutes, we're just going to hear him sing.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's not even like good singing. You know, we know he's got a good voice. He did the Johnny Cash biopic. But he's this fragile, frail person.
Yeah.
And same with Harley, Lee or whatever her name was, the Harlequin character played by Lady Gaga. They were all these like very whispery, trying to find my voice kind of songs, you know, really said sort of beneath their breath.
Yes.
And so by the third or fourth one of those, you're like, fuck, man.
Yeah. And they're not like informing us about the characters in any way.
Yeah.
You know, if they were like really underpinning like a character's journey in some way, which is typically what musical numbers do.
Yes.
Yeah.
They weren't really, they're just there for their own sake. They're not there for the movie.
No.
It also feels like Todd Phillips, who I think Todd Phillips is kind of a problem. I think he's a very surface level director.
Yeah.
I don't think he has defined the substance and stuff like this. Mm. But it feels like he didn't want to make a musical.
Yeah.
This wasn't his idea, but he was kind of like forced into it essentially.
Yes.
I don't know if that's true or not, but it feels like he's very resistant to like the film he's making.
If you're excited about making a musical of a courtroom drama, you get Razzle Dazzle from Chicago.
Yes.
Which is funny.
Yeah.
Fun to watch. Mm. It's a sing-along tune. You know, it's got all the things that a Joker musical should be.
Exactly.
How many times did you fucking laugh in this movie? Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, like, so there were not even those moments where we even sniggered or laughed things.
And that's like another point of like the underpinning of his character in the first one of this being this aspiring stand-up comedian.
Yes.
We don't see any of that in this.
Yeah.
There's no joke in the Joker.
Yeah.
You know?
But then also they play off his comedy in the first movie as not being funny.
Yes.
That's the whole premise, right?
He thinks he's funny. Yeah.
But then the problem, I think fundamentally with this character on screen is like, you can't like him.
Yeah.
So how are you going to sympathize with them?
Yes.
How are you going to sympathize with the drama?
Mm.
You know, unless you're doing it because of what we spoke about in the first film.
Yes.
Which is inherently problematic.
Yeah.
You know?
I think there's something that you can do there, and like Mark Hamill's Joker does this perfectly.
Right.
Is they kind of trick you into liking him because he is very funny and he is charismatic.
Yes.
And then he does something that makes you go, oh, wait, he's terrible.
Oh, wait, he's like a terrorist. Yes.
Like, you find yourself liking him, but then he like undercuts it by, you know.
Yeah, then he beats up one of the Robins with the baseball bat.
Exactly. Yeah.
Know? Okay. Sure. I think that explains it. Yeah. And I think, you know, maybe the one redeeming thing, as I said, is that if you do hear this thought and you're perhaps a bit more prepared for the film, you could perhaps enjoy it.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
But it's a very interesting moment to have said, to have had such a big budget production get away with telling this particular story.
I was about to say, it's a $200 million movie. Where did all that money go?
Sure.
It doesn't look like a $200 million movie at all. It's a courtroom. Like, the main locations are a courtroom and an asylum.
Yeah.
Where's the money, dude? And you look at Alien Romulus, that was $80
million. Yeah. But you think about it doesn't look or feel any bigger than the first one, which cost $50 million.
Yeah.
Where the hell did all that money go?
What the hell, dude?
I genuinely don't understand it.
Are we correct in saying $200
million? $200 million.
Yeah. Which is the Marvel budget. Yeah. It's in the realm of the Marvel.
Of like big visual effects movies, which this wasn't one of those.
Yeah, and you think that's going to go to the musical numbers and the sound stages and the set building for it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, unless everything in this movie was a set.
Yes.
And they literally built like everything from the ground up, which I doubt they did. Mm. Especially for like big exteriors of courtrooms and that sort of thing. You're not building that stuff.
No. Interesting. Well, you shouldn't be.
Yes.
You know?
Another movie that I was, I think, a little disappointed in,
oh, really?
Which I spoke about last week, was Wolves.
Oh, okay.
Which is the big George Clooney, Brad Pitt film that arrived on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, you hadn't finished watching
it last
week.
I hadn't finished watching it. I have since finished it, and I'm still not wowed.
Okay.
It was also another moment of big actors being somewhat underutilized.
Okay.
From a story perspective that perhaps didn't go as far or as wide as we wanted it to.
Okay.
But still worth your time on the couch.
Okay.
I think there is something to it.
Mm.
But yeah.
I've heard, like, a criticism I've heard is something like that's somewhat comparable, like the Ocean's movies.
Yeah.
Which are very cool movies. Like, they just like, they're cool without trying to be cool.
Mm.
The criticism I heard is this is trying too hard to kind of be cool in the same way.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work very well.
That's perfect, because there are a couple of moments where you're like, okay, got it.
Yes.
You're grumpy about having to work together.
Yes.
Now move on.
Okay.
But they make that joke like 3 or 4 times and they stretch it out.
Yes. Sure.
And then it's like, then you only start getting the glimmer of their bromance, because basically this is two sort of assassin-y type figures.
Yes.
You know, these kind of mysterious jobs that only exist in the movies.
Yes.
They probably do in real life. Yeah. But like, you know, the movies make these kinds of people out to be real. The assassins, and in this case, it's the fixers,
right,
who are the people you call to fix a problem. A problem starts and George Clooney is brought in, only to discover that Brad Pitt is also brought in, and the two of them have to work together to solve this problem over the course of the night.
Okay.
There's nice little twists and turns. It's not shit,
mm,
but I'm not raving about it.
Okay.
Any other movies?
No.
Okay, cool. Should we go on to TV?
Sure.
Cole, yeah, you've been wanting to talk about Agatha All Along.
Yes, Agatha All Along, which was a nice surprise,
cool,
right? So I stayed away from the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the Hawkeye series, because I wasn't particularly interested in that,
mm-hmm,
and doing more of the Marvel grind,
yeah,
I think around the time that those came out. Then Agatha All Along pops up, and it's a spin-off of WandaVision.
Yes.
So
this exists in the Marvel television universe.
Yeah.
Very much, and they took that like quite literally in WandaVision, where it's very much about being television through the ages, like in this kind of meta-narrative that's all because of Wanda's magic. And eventually this magic unravels, and one of the neighbors in this like beautiful little idyllic sitcom is Agatha, and she's revealed to not just be one of the neighbors, she's a witch, like Wanda.
Right.
And played by Catherine Hahn. So I don't know if you guys remember Catherine Hahn from Parks and Recreation, where she was the political
advisor. Yeah, she's great. You'll recognize her from being in lots and lots of stuff.
Hilariously funny. And that doesn't change here. She is so charismatic. Mm. She is like a comic lead, which is funny. So this is played off as being incredibly campy. It's about a coven of witches.
Okay.
After the events of WandaVision, Agatha is being pursued by the Salem Seven.
Okay.
Who are like these, they don't talk about them much, but they're just like scary fucking old witches.
Oh, right.
That, and she fucked up a bit, and now they're coming to fuck her up.
Right.
Basically, that's the turn that I've got there.
It might be important to mention, and perhaps you can confirm this, you don't have to have watched all this other stuff.
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay, it certainly complements it, but if you have missed all of WandaVision and all of Marvel stuff, you could still appreciate this
They
show.
Do refer to it in the first episode, a little bit of it, but not to the point where you're going to be confused, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah.
So all of this is on Disney Plus.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And eventually this group of misfit witches are pulled together, and they have to walk the Deep Roads, or like the Witches Road. Sorry, Deep Roads is Dragon Age. That's what I'm playing at the moment. the Witches Road, which is you need a coven to enter it, and they form this coven in order to escape the Salem Seven. So she's lying to them about why she's going in. So there's that to play on. And yeah, it was entertaining, scary, funny first 3 episodes, and campy as hell.
Okay.
You know, I was trying to ask my friend Shana what the style of humor is that women have in comedies. Like, if Anchorman and Hot Rod and American Pie are like boyish humor.
Yeah. Mm.
What is the fun equivalent of like Legally Blonde and Mean Girls? And
yes,
there's like this feminine campiness. Yeah. I was trying to figure out what that is called.
Okay.
And this like takes that and hams it up quite a bit.
Okay.
And it's a shit ton of fun.
Cool.
Interesting. It's funny to kind of dissect forms of humor because a person like Will Ferrell plays straight.
Yes.
He plays a straight man.
Yes.
But so ridiculous that it's funny. But yeah. he maintains a serious face.
Yes.
And in Hot Rod, Andy Samberg believes he's cool.
Yeah.
But he's fucking not cool.
Yes.
But he believes he's cool, and that's the joke.
Right.
Interesting to sort of play with like what is human.
Yeah, because the only word we have for that is campy. Like,
yes.
It's the only word I can really come up with. But nice.
Campy, I believe, would be aware of its silliness.
Yes.
And it would own its dumbness.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
It's like that does happen to an extent. Absolutely.
Because then when you speak of Mean Girls is just smart, funny writing.
Yes.
Like it's all in the wit of like the quick, quippy dialogue.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, interesting. Penguin. Sorry, to just go back to dark DC world.
Mm.
Penguin exists in the same world that
the Joker
our friend the Joker is. If you started Penguin.
Yes. So it's on Showmax.
Cool.
For us South Africans.
Yeah.
And it kind of feels like The Sopranos.
Okay.
Like you're watching Goodfellas or The Sopranos. Yes.
It's like a mobster.
Yeah.
Mobster world.
It's a mobster drama. And it's all about like the misadventures of Penguin, but in this power vacuum that's happened post the Batman film.
Yes.
Right? So where Salvatore Moroni?
No. He's something the guy
along
who...
those lines.
It's Carmine Falcone.
Oh.
That's... What's the character, the actor's name?
Hank Azaria.
No, it's not Hank Azaria.
Isn't that Hank Azaria?
But quite a while ago, not too long ago, we were treated to...
The guy I get confused with Hank Azaria.
We were treated to a new version of Batman where Robert Pattinson... played a very dark and like both literal and figurative dark Batman.
Right.
And we were treated to Penguin being Colin Farrell in a very done prosthetic makeup to be this big Italian mobster boss, as opposed to the very campy, to go back to that term, Tim Burton version of the Penguin, which we have really only ever other seen.
Yeah.
Which was the Danny DeVito sort of gothic, campy.
Yes.
And it's cool to see how they interpreted his penguinness.
Yes.
With the fact that he's got that stumpy foot and he walks and waddles like a penguin.
Oh, is that how they've done it? Okay, cool.
And that's really cool. The character with the actor we're thinking of is John Turturro.
John Turturro, That's Falcone,
Don't know why I get him and Frank Azaria confused.
I don't know.
John Turturro.
Yeah.
What's I know the name. What's the character? What has he done?
Oh, my Lord. He's been in so much stuff. Big Lebowski.
He's the guy with the polished bowling balls.
Yeah, Jesus. Kielsos in the Big Lebowski.
Yeah,
no, he's great.
Barton Fink.
Yeah, Fink. All right. Okay, so you're enjoying it. It's also only getting started. It's episodic.
Yes, so it's only getting started now. And I think the highlights of this series is like the performances obviously are incredible.
Mm.
And the Penguin is great himself. But there's another actor involved in this, and her name is Kristen Milioti.
Oh,
and she plays Sofia Falcone, the daughter of the mob boss who was murdered in the previous one,
right?
And I can't tell you how duplicitous.
Oh, nice word.
Yeah, very good. And sneaky the Penguin is.
He's
playing like every single person in this field as a lowly henchman whose boss has just been murdered.
Right.
And now there's this power vacuum that everyone's trying to grab.
Is that what the point of the story is?
Yes.
In the wake of this power vacuum, could he rise up to be powerful?
Yes.
This is on Showmax.
Yeah.
Because it is a HBO film.
So Kristen Milioti plays the Hangman. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of the Batman villain, the Hangman.
No.
So she's basically gone around and murdered a whole bunch of people and then put an Arkham for it.
And
for some reason she's out of Arkham now.
Okay.
And now she's trying to manage the family drama.
Right.
And Penguin is lying to her.
Okay.
And he's won her over.
Okay.
Against their own better judgment. It's very good.
In the world of DC,
as
you say, Arkham, and there's Gotham, which we all know.
Mm.
And we've also always known that Gotham is New York City. They it's an inspiration of, it's the same, it's inspired by, it's very much the heart of it.
Yeah.
And Arkham is a little bit like, what's the Rikers Island, which is the prison in New York.
Yes.
On the outskirts of the city.
Yes.
I have one question for you, and perhaps this can be our something that could potentially wrap up today's shift. In Joker sequel, they say the people of New York City.
Yes.
Why the fuck did they say that?
I don't know. The first one, they definitely refer to it as Gotham.
In Joker sequel, they say Gotham. They use the word Gotham. We all know it's the aesthetic of New York. They do say Gotham.
So is he from Gotham, but he's been tried in New York for some reason?
But why the fuck in this world did they bring up New York?
So in they actually did explain this at one point in DC. So like Marvel Comics, they all exist in like New York City, San Francisco, all these real places. In DC, there's, you know,
They've made up names, yeah.
Yes. So they did, back in the day, they used to do Marvel DC crossovers quite commonly.
Yes.
And in one of those things, the Marvel characters pointed out or realized that Earth in the DC universe is like 10% bigger than it is in like our universe.
Okay.
So there's physically more space.
Okay.
So there's literally like between cities, there's larger spaces. So there are more cities that have popped up in spaces between cities.
Okay.
They literally went, wait a minute, we need to explain how Gotham and New York can both exist.
Yes.
In roughly the same place.
Okay. So in the world of DC, although Bruce Wayne and everything is all about Gotham City, New York is still a place.
New York still exists. Washington still exists.
Okay. Because I thought there was such a break of the sort of the fourth wall where all of a sudden in this courtroom drama, the head juror said New York and not Gotham.
Yes. Because in like the early days, they were obviously like
that seems
inventing cities that were parallels to real cities.
It seems unnecessary and confusing. They should have just said the people of Gotham.
Like Gotham was obviously New York, Metropolis was Washington, Coast City was Seattle. Like
All of that makes sense. They should have just kept that.
Going. Yes.
Anyways. Magic, guys.
Yeah.
What a nice little catch up.
Mm. Yeah, it was lovely.
And Coley, you're going to go on a nice big adventure soon.
Yeah. 4 weeks in the UK.
Nice.
Very exciting, man.
So I'll be away. I'm going to try watch some movies that we can't watch here.
Yeah.
What are you aiming for?
The Substance with Demi Moore and Megalopolis, if it's still on. Because I think
it might be pulled from cinemas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, because apparently they do their programming week by week. So I can't book for this weekend now because it's not Thursday yet.
Okay.
They release the new like schedule of films like the Friday before, unless it's a new release.
Right. Yeah, I can tell you why, because cinemas like the Bioscope have to book week by week because the economy of a film is different in every week of its release.
Right.
So they don't want to commit too far in advance because they want to see how to chop and change and which will make the cut and which will be brought
in. I'm worried that I'm like a week late because everyone's looking at Megalopolis making less money than Cats, you know,
but
and
it's
Borderlands.
Wild, it's wild that you've got such a potential stonker on your hands and you want to go and watch it.
We have to watch it. We have to watch it, guys.
No, I know. But
I agree with that, but making really it part of like a UK trip is fascinating to me.
Well, it's a testament as to why you belong behind the counter of the video store because when you travel, you want to go and visit a cinema and watch a movie.
Totally.
That's exactly what I want to do.
Yes.
Sometimes I don't always have the time to go and actually watch a movie, but when I was in Amsterdam, I like tracked down one or two cinemas just to walk in and see the lobby and take photos and like I'm that kind of person. I spent a month in New York and literally on every day, so in about 20 or 30 days, I was able to visit one different film-related site each day, be it a museum or a cinema.
Cool.
And I was kind of on my own. I had friends there that I was visiting, but I had enough time to watch quite a lot of movies, which was quite cool to sit in these cinemas and experience it. Geek.
Total.
Magic. Thank you, guys. Thanks for the day. Coley, enjoy your trip.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry that you can't be at my wedding, which is coming up also.
And your bachelor's.
In a few days. Yeah, the bachelor weekend is this coming weekend, which is very exciting. So safe travels.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys soon.
Yeah.
And once again, thanks guys for tolerating us. We can't do the Tuesday this week as a result of what I said at the beginning. So it's cool that we could still get a little epi out because we had to talk about Joker.
Yeah.
All right.
This is true.
Magic, thank you guys. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.